Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Tzaddi He. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Joey Alaham in honor of the rabbi with love and gratitude. The Skill of Mitzvot. Today's daf is being studied by Le'ilu Nishmat Chacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther, Ruach Hashem Tnihem Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Sadid Dalet Amud Bet, four lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah that according to the Bileazer, if a lady is godelet, kohelet, or pokeset, she is hayevet on Shabbat. What are these things? So godelet, we learned, if she braids her hair. Kohelet would be if she paints her eyes, meaning she puts mascara on her eyes. Vechen pokeset. Now, pokeset, Rashi in the Mishnah gave us two different interpretations. Some learn that it's running one's hands through the hair, or with, let's say, a comb, so like combing one's hair. Or he says pokeset is taking strips of dough and they would place it on the face in order to give her a red complexion. Somehow the dough would give a red complexion. So that would be pokeset. So now the Gemara is going to analyze why are these things hayav, which means which melacha do these items fall under. So the Gemara says, godelet, that's the braiding, kohelet, that's the painting the eyes, upokeset, that's what we just said, either the dough on the face or the combing of the hair, according to Rashi. Mishum mai mehayba. For what melacha is she going to be hayab? Amar Rabbi Abin, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, godelet mishum oreget. The godelet, the braiding, is under the melacha of oreg. Oreg is weaving. So just like you're making a weave in the hair, you're braiding the hair together, it's oreg. Kohelet mishum kotevet. Painting the eyes like writing. Just like you outline the letters when you write, so too is she's outlining the eye with a mark. Pokeset mishum toveh. Now, toveh is literally spinning. Now, how do you learn that pokeset is spinning? So either you say that if you're learning that they put the dough on the face, so what does spinning actually do? Spinning takes many strings, and you spin them together and it makes it into one. So too, let's say this dough, they make it into strips and place it on the lady's face, so it's similar to toveh. Or the explanation would be that when the lady combs her hair, so she's making all these, she's taking the tangles out, so to speak. So now each hair is separate, so it's like toveh, that you make one string instead of many. Comes the Gemara and says, Amru Rabbanan Kamed Rab Abhu. So when the rabbis heard this, they told Rab Abhu, V'chi derech ariga bekach, V'chi derech ketiva bekach, V'chi derech tiviya bekach. They questioned all three melachot over here. First of all, when it came to braiding one's hair, is that the derech of ariga? Is that considered weaving? Why? So the Tosfot says that, first of all, there's no weaving when it comes to hair, because, number one, the hair is attached. Normally you don't weave on something that's attached to the animal. Second of all, usually when you weave, it's for permanent purposes. Here, it's not permanent. The braid eventually is going to come out. So the Gemara says, furthermore, v'chi derech ketiva bekach, is that considered writing because you're painting on your eye? It's not really writing. Writing is, for example, before writing letters. Here, it's not writing letters. This is just marking. V'chi derech ketiva bekach, is this considered derech ketiva? Is this considered spinning? When a lady combs her hair, is that considered like spinning? So, ela amala babu. So the Rabbu said, "Lididi mefarish ali mina de Rabbi Yosef ben Hanina." So he said, "I heard from Rabbi Yosef ben Hanina that he explained what the melachot are over here. Kochelet mishum tzovat, painting the eye. That's really the din of tzoveya. Tzoveya is what is dying, and therefore it's painting. It's actually painting. It's more similar. Godelet upokeset."
and the other two, which means making the braids in the hair, or straightening the hair, running the hands through the hair, mishum boneh. That's going to be the isur of building, boneh. So the Gemara says, v'chi derech binyan bekach. Is that considered binyan? Lady makes a braid in the hair? Well, what kind of a construction is that? So the Gemara says, in. Yes, indeed. We have a pasuk in the Torah to confirm this. Kededarish Rabbi Shimon ben Benasya. We have a pasuk in Sefer Bereshit. When God created Hava, it says, Vayiven Hashem Elohim et Asela. That literally God fashioned the rib of Adam Arishon into Hava. But the Gemara makes a derasha on this pasuk and says, Melamed Shekil'a HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeHava. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu braided the hair of Hava, Vevia Etzel Adam. And then brought Hava to Adam Arishon, meaning he made Hava look beautiful in order to present Hava to Adam Arishon. Now, where in this pasuk does it say he braided her hair? All it says is Vayiven. Literally means he fashioned her. So the Gemara says Sheken bekarche ayam, on the islands korim lekliata, they call a braid benita. So therefore Vayiven, if we have that understanding, Vayiven means he braided her hair, and that's considered what? Boneh. Vayiven literally means he fashioned. So therefore you see that what? That braiding hair is considered a binyan, because you're fixing, so to speak, the lady. Anything that's beautifying the lady or fixing her, making her look nice, so that can go under the concept of boneh. So therefore, kiliat se'ar is boneh, or for that matter, pokeset, when she's either running her fingers through her hair to straighten them out, or according to the other opinion that you're putting the dough on the face, all that is beautifying her. So that would be under the category of, you know, adding positive corrections or enhancements to the lady. So that would be under the inyan of boneh. So comes Gemara and says, Tanya, we have a bright. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar taught, godelet, kohelet, upokeset, all those three melakot that we're discussing, le'atzma petura. She does it to herself, she's petura, she's exempt. Why? Because these things you really can't do good to yourself. You need somebody else to do these things, to braid your own hair, or to put on the mascara on the eyes. So when you do it yourself, it doesn't come out usually good. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he'll say, patur, lahavirta hayevet. But if you do it for your friend, then hayevet. So we go back to our Mishnah, where Rabbi Eliezer said all these things, you're hayav, it's only talking about when she's doing it for somebody else. But if she's doing it for herself, indeed she will be patur. V'chein haya Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer. Furthermore, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar taught, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Isha lo ta'avir srak al paneha. A lady should not put srak on her face. Srak, as she says, is seba adom. That's a red makeup. She should not look like maybe like a rouge. She should not put on her face mepeneh shetzovat, because it falls under the category again of tzovat. Just like we learned kohelet, right? Putting the mascara is tzoveya. So he's telling you also putting the red rouge on the lady's face on Shabbat, that would be like the makeup, would also be under the category of tzovat. Tzovat is dying.
No, it's not permanent.
Even though it is not permanent, it will still be asur. Okay? Comes the Gemara and says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Now we discuss different melachot. Ha-cholev. Cholev would mean one that milks a cow on Shabbat. Cholev, mishon halav. Va-mehabetz. What is mehabetz? So that she tells us on the third line, mehabetz, ha-ma'amida halav bekeva. Either that means placing the milk in the keva. Keva would be one of the stomachs of the animal. We know that the keva has in it a certain enzyme called rennet, and the rennet has the ability to cause the milk to congeal and turn it into cheese. So mehabetz is placing the milk into the keva on Shabbat. Now then, she brings a different interpretation. Velinir e mehabetz Ose kimin keli gemi. You make like a certain vessel made out of gemi. Vinotena kafui betocho. And you place the congealed cheese in that vessel. Umea halav shen nisyoben notfin. Which means the cheese, after it's congealed, it still has some liquid. It still has some milk. That milk that's left over after the congealment of the cheese is called mehalav. In English, they might call that the whey. So you have to separate the whey from the congealed cheese. So they place it in a certain type of keli, and it causes the mehalav to drip out. That would be mehabetz. Megaben. Megaben is actually making the bricks of cheese, which means after a person has, let's say, the congealed part, he takes all the congealed pieces of the cheese and puts them together. That is megaben. So all these items on Shabbat, what's the shi'ur that one has to do these items to be hayab? So the Gemara says, kegrogeret. Again, it goes with the shi'ur of food, and therefore it is the size of a fig. Next cases. Hamechabed v'hamerabetz v'arodeh halot devash. Mechabed literally means one that sweeps the floor. Mechabed v'shisus et habayit. Hamerabetz. Merabetz is when there's, let's say, dust in the house. One takes water and sprinkles it on the floor in order to keep the dust down so it doesn't rise up. That's merabetz. V'arodeh halot devash. Halot dvash are the combs in the honeycomb, which is somebody that takes out the honeycombs from the beehive of the honeycomb on Shabbat. In all these cases, shagag b'Shabbat. If you did it on Shabbat b'shogeg, these cases hayav hatat. You're going to be hayav hatat. Hezid b'yom tov. Now, obviously, if you did it b'mezid on Shabbat, Yahayav Sikira. Hezid b'yom tov, and the law of yom tov, you do not get Sikira for doing something b'mezid, but you'll get Lokei Arba'im. You get Malkut if you did these things on yom tov. Devrei Rabbi Eliezer. These are the words of Rabbi Eliezer. V'hachamim omrim. The hachamim come along and say, Echad zeh ve'echad zeh eno ela mishum shevut. Which means, whether it's these or these, it's only midrabanan. Now what is it? Hadzeh v'hadzeh. So that she says, ben b'Shabbat, ben b'Yom Tov. Whether you do it on Shabbat or you do it on Yom Tov, you're not going to be hayav hatat, nor are you going to get malkut on Yom Tov. They hold all these items are midrabanan. Now, there's just a question over here. When the rabbis say that you're not hayav hatat, is it only going back on these last items that we said? Meaning mechabed, merabed, lodeh halot, or is it going back on the ones we said above that as well? Acholev, mechabed, and megabed. Two opinions in the Rishonim. That's the opinion as well as Rav Hai Gaon, that the rabbis are poter on all these melachot that we mentioned above. Now there is
Can you eat the honey on Yom Tov?
Before we get to eating the honey on Yom Tov, it would be asur to draw it out. If it's asur to draw it out, so then you run into problems eating it if you did something be isur. In any event, there is an important Rashba over here that says that when we say over here, Echad zeh ve'echad zeh eno ela mishum shevut, that all these items are midrabanan according to the Hakamim, the only isur drabanan, it's the exclusion of mechabed. Sweeping the floor, even the rabbis will say, is hayav. Why? Because the issue of sweeping the floor is that when one sweeps, he inevitably is going to fill up some holes that are in the ground with dirt. And therefore, that's going to be considered boneh when you do it in the house. And therefore, the rabbis agree that mechaber is automatically, it's a psik neshe, meaning it's inevitable that you're going to fill up those holes. So therefore, when the rabbis say, in all these cases, it's the Rabbanan, it's all the cases chutz from, except Mechabed, which even they're going to say, is a Deodaita, because it's inevitably that you're going to fill up the holes. Now the Rashba makes a diuk makes an observation from this, from what Rashi said. Because when Rashi said, look at the Buddha Mechil, Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh, Rashi says, Echad Shabbat Ve'Echad Yom Tov. Now he could have learned Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh, he could have learned them going on the Melachot. He could have, whether it's Mechabed, whether it's Merabes, whether it's, from the fact that Rashi learned Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh, not discussing the Melachot, because it's not Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh when it comes to the Melachot. There is one melacha over there that's indeed going to be hayav. When he said Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh, meant whether it's on Shabbat or whether it's on Yom Tov, some of the melachot are going to be the Rabbanan, but one is going to remain on the Doraita level. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya Iklal in Hadea. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya found himself in Nardea. Ba'umine. So the rabbi saw Rav Nachman there. They asked him a question. Cholev mishum mai mihayev. Going back. Said, milking a cow on Shabbat is asur. What's the isur? What's the melacha? Amar deu mishum cholev. He said, milking. Mechabetz mishum mai mechayev. So what is mechabetz then? What's the hayuv? Amar lo mishum mechabetz. Because you're being mechabetz. Megaben mishum mai mechayev. What is megaben the isur of? Amar lo mishum megaben. He said, because you're making gibun. So Amru there, the rabbis were not too satisfied with those answers. So the rabbis told them, Rabach katil kane be'agma. Your rabbi is cutting reeds by the agma, by the marsh. Which means, the way that she said, that's a way of saying that he does not explain this over here. Which means he's wasting his time. He's cutting reeds by the marsh. If that's the way he taught you this item, that cholev is mishum cholev and megaben is mishum megaben, what does that mean? What is the melakot over here? So they didn't like it. They didn't like that interpretation. So he went of Nachman. Sha'il ben midrash. He went to ask him ben midrash. What indeed are the melakot over here? Amrule. So he told him, cholev chayav mishum mefarek. So he told him, milking a cow, the isur over here is mefarek. Now what is mefarek? Mefarek, Rashi tells us, is a offshoot, is a todah of dash. What was dash? Dash was threshing. What's the properties of threshing? Taking the wheat out of the chaff. So the same thing over here is taking the milk out of the udder. Right? When you're taking food out of a non-food, so to speak, right? And you're pulling it out, so that would be like dash. So dash is by wheat. So by milking a cow, it's called mefarek. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says mefarek. Kemo mefarek masui. Now, when you say to unload, let's say, an animal, we call that pirika. So therefore, we call that mefarek also, because you're, so to speak, unloading the udder from its milk. So it's removing it, that is called mefarek. Now, obviously we have to say that dash, which is the av melacha here, has applicability even by things that don't grow from the ground. Right? Because if you say in dash ela begidule karka, so then you can't say milking a cow, because a cow is not considered gidule karka. So Tosfot just points that out. We must be say that in disha begidule karka. You can even say it is on other items. Now it should be pointed out that this is one version of the Gemara, but there are many other opinions of why a person would be hayav milking a cow on Shabbat. Different opinions that are brought down amongst the Rishonim. In any event, the Gemara continues, mehabetz hayav mishum borer. Now, if it means that you're separating the milk or the whey from the cheese, so you're separating ochel and psolet, so therefore that would be under the category of borer. Megaben hayav mishum boneh. Megaben is if you're putting the congealed cheese together and forming, let's say, a solid brick out of it, so that would be considered boneh. And Gemara says, hamchabed v'hamamrabetz v'harodecha lo dvash. If you did all these items, you swept, or you placed the water on the floor to keep the dust down, v'harodecha lo dvash, or you took out the halo dvash, the cakes of honey from the comb, shagag v'shabat hayav hatat, like we learned. If you did it on Shabbat, Meshogik, Chayav Hatat, Yezid, B'yom Tov, Lokar, Ba'ayim, Devinir, B'yili, Aizir. Amar, Rabbi, El-Hazar, Maitam, Amar, Rabbi, Aizir. What's the reason, which means, I can understand the reason of Mechabed and Merabetz. Because both those things have a potential of filling up holes in the ground. When you're sweeping, it fills up the holes in the ground, that's considered boneh. When even you're putting the water on the ground, the dust is settling, it can now possibly, potentially fill up holes. So I'm going to be the answer, we'll say, you're going to be hayab on that. Now even though, in the case of, let's say, putting the water on the ground, it's not, let's say, automatically going to happen, we can say that Bili Ezer holds like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says Dabar She'en Mitkaven is Asur, and could be that he'll hold even worse over here. That could be, you'll have to say, because even Dabar She'en Mitkaven is Asur, it's not Asur Min HaTorah, it's Asur Min Rabbanan. So therefore, you'll have to say that could be he holds that this is a Psik Reshe, that this is inevitably going to happen, therefore he holds it's hayav. And whereas Hakamim will say that when you're watering the floor, putting water, it's not inevitable that it's going to happen, therefore they say it's only Isur the Rabbanan. That's the that's the way the Tosafot understands it. In any event, the Gemara says, how do we know what's the Isur of taking the honey cakes out of the comb? As you say, it's Chayuf Hatat, what's the Isur in that? So the Gemara says, Dichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk, Vayitbol ota biyara tadevash. If we go back to our story in the Navi, one time Shaul HaMelech proclaimed a fast. And his son Yonatan did not hear that his father proclaimed a fast. So it says he ate honey on the day of the fast. He dipped the bread into the honey. So the Gemara, the Pasuk calls honey, Yara tadevash. Shiri means the honey from the woods. So the Gemara says the woods, what's the connection between woods and honey? Honey doesn't come from the woods. So the Gemara says, Ela lo malech has to teach you. Ma ya'ar hatolesh mehenu b'shat hayav hatat. Just like in the woods, if somebody would cut a tree from the woods, he'd be hayav mishum tolesh, right, for uprooting. So too, when you take out the cakes of honey from the honeycomb, that's considered tolesh. And we learn it from the pasuk yarat devash, that devash has a din of a yar, just like a forest is hayav tirisha. So too, honey is hayav also tirisha. That is the isur. Comes the Gemara and says. Amemor shara zilha b'mechoza. Amemor allowed sprinkling of the floors in mechoza on Shabbat with water. So the Gemara says, Amar tama mai amura banan. What's the reason why the rabbis forbade this? Dilma atel asfuyegumot. Because you're worried that they might come and fill in the holes. Especially according to the rabbis, right? They said it's only a maybe. That's why they said it's not Asur min HaTorah. Ha'chalek agumot. He says in the city of Mechoza, all the floors are made out of stone. So therefore, there is no gezerah that somebody might come to fill in the holes. It seems that only because all the floors in the city were made out of stone. It seems if it was less than that, he would have been osir. But just because there's no possibility for somebody to come to make an Isur, at least in Mechoza, so he permitted it. Gemara tells another story. Rava Tosfa, that was his name. Ashkeche le Ravina, he saw Ravina, dekam mitzta'ed mehavla. He saw that Ravina on Shabbat was suffering from havla, havla's heat. Ve'amri la mor kashisha bered de Rava, and some say it was mor kashisha, Ashkeche le Rav Asher. He found Rav Asher, dekam mitzta'ed mehavla. Also he saw him on Shabbat, that he was suffering from havla, that she says, Shaya avak ole umarbe haval. Which means what happened was he was sitting in the room, and it seems the dust was rising from the floor, and it was causing him, obviously it was polluting the air, and he was having a hard time with it. It was causing him a problem. I mean, he didn't have air. He couldn't breathe properly. That's what it was. He couldn't breathe because of the air was filled with dust. And what? He knew on Shabbat you're not allowed to put the water on the floor to keep the dirt down. So Amar le, so he told him, Lo savar le'amor le'adetanya. Doesn't our master know what the Braita said about this? What did the Braita say? Detanya harotze le'rabbet tadbeto b'Shabbat. the person wants to come water his ground on Shabbat, mevi areva mele'a mayim, bring a, let's say, a bucket filled with water, v'rochetz panav bezavidzu, go wash your face in one corner, right? Yadav bezavidzu, wash your hands in another corner, v'raglav bezavidzu, and your feet in a different corner. Nimsa habayit mitrabetz me'elav. And automatically, what's going to happen? The ground will be watered by itself, which means you're allowed to make what's called in halakha ha'arama. You're allowed to make over here a subterfuge in order to water the ground, which means you're doing it for a different purpose, so to speak, even though your intent really is to water the ground, which means the rabbis permitted such arama, which means in a case over here where your kavanah is really not to fill in the holes. That was the whole isur over here, right? You might come to fill in the holes over here. That's why it would be asur according to the rabbis. They say it's not a psik reshe, obviously it's not an automatic, and therefore it's davar she'en mitkaven. You don't have kavanah. We all like Rabbi Shimon, let's say, that says davar she'en mitkaven is okay. So however, the hakamim allowed you in such a case to do it in a ha'arama way, to do it in a subterfuge. You have kavanah for something else, and it happens automatically. So it comes again, Gemara says, didn't you know that braita? She says, what are you suffering for? Go wash your hands on the ground over there and you have no problem. Amar le, so he told him, lava da'tai. Lava da'tai either means one of two things. Either I didn't know the braita, or I knew the braita, but I don't hold like that braita. Tana, we have a Tanaic statement, a braita. Isha hachama. Isha hachama literally means a wise lady. That she says, who's a wise lady? Either she's married to a tamid hacham, or she's the daughter of a tamid hakam. That's what makes the lady wise, because she hears the halachot either from her husband or from her father. Merabetzet betah b'shabbat. She's able to be merabetzet the floor on Shabbat. Why? With this harama, as we said. Has she? Why did Gemara say isha hakama? Because she hears from her father, and her father tells her, and this is mutar over here. Right. Make believe you're washing your hands over here, and you'll be able to water the ground on Shabbat. So Gemara says isha hakama merabetzet betah b'shabbat. She knows the loophole of how to water the floor on Shabbat, because she hears it from her father, who's a tamid hakam, or her husband's tamid hakam. Gemara concludes today the svira lan k'Rabbi Shimon, that we hold like Rabbi Shimon, that says what? That says davar she'en mitkaven mutar shari afilu lechetechila. But once we hold like Rabbi Shimon that says davar she'en mitkaven, so therefore it would be mutar to water the floor lechetechila. You don't have to even make a harama, which means I go back to what we said. When did we say you have to make harama? That's if you're holding like, let's say, Rabbi Yehuda that says what davar she'en mitkaven asur. So if you hold the Vashem et Kavin Asur, and the rabbis hold it wasn't a psik reshe in that case, so therefore, they say harama will be mutar. However, today we hold like the Bishimon, that means the Vashem et Kavin is mutar, you don't even have to make a harama, you can actually go water the floor on Shabbat, let the dust settle. Why? Because since it's not a psik reshe, and you're not mitkavin to fill in the holes, the Vashem et Kavin mutar, but that's only by the harbatza. But by kibud habayit, but by sweeping, as we said, the rabbis will hold indeed that it is a psik reshe, and therefore indeed it will be asur on Shabbat, could be hayab, even according to the hakamim. Now, the only question that we can have over here is, back to the case of marbit. Marbit, we said, is pouring the water on the ground to settle the dust. Clearly, Rabbi Eliezer holds isur deoraita. He said hayab. And clearly the rabbis held asur. It's only asur d'rabbanan. Now obviously, they must have been going in the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says, davar she'en mitkaven asur. So then why would the Rabbi Eliezer say hayab? Because he says, even though it's davar she'en mitkaven, but it's psik reshe, it's inevitably going to get filled up the holes in the ground for hayab. Where the rabbis say, it's not a psik reshe. That's hard to say. The machloket is on something that's a reality. So the machloket of mitziyut comes out. Is it going to get filled up automatically or not? We try not to make a machloket in mitziyut, which means something like that, just check it out. Do it 10 times and you'll see if it's inevitable or it's not inevitable. How can the rabbis argue if it's a psik reshe or if it's not a psik reshe? So I saw one of the Mefarshim, I think Acham Oya brings it down in Me'or Yisrael, that he says the machloket is how much, what level is considered a psik nesheh, which means the argument is that everybody agreed it happened a certain amount of times, let's say. Right? The probability of it happening is, let's say, at a certain level. The machloket is that level considered psik nesheh inevitable? Or the rabbis will tell you, no, that's not considered enough to make a psik. So they're not arguing on what's happening. They're arguing on is what's happening defined as a psik nesheh or not. In any event, the Gemara concludes that since you hold like to be Shimon, that said, Danashim et Kaven Mutar, and the rabbis hold over here, it's not a psik nesheh, so we'd be able to sprinkle the ground with water. Comes the Gemara and says, comes the Mishnah and says, Hatonesh me'atzitz nakuv hayav, v'she'enu nakuv patur. Now we discuss the subject of flower pots. Flower pot is called an atzitz. There's two types of flower pots. There's a flower pot that has a hole in the bottom of it, and that hole is placed on the ground. Okay, so it's actually touching the dirt of the ground. That's called atzitz, nakub. Flower pot that has a hole in it. And then there's an atzitz, she'enu nakuv, a flower pot that is closed on the bottom, right? So it's only receiving its nutrients from the dirt that is the flower pot itself. So the Gemara tells us a big difference between an atzitz nakuv and an atzitz she'enu nakuv. What is that? Hatolesh ma'atzitz nakuv. If a person, let's say, pulls out something from a flower pot that has a hole in the bottom of it, hayav. One is going to be considered hayab, meaning for being uprooting something that's attached to the ground. No. Now, even though it's not attached to the ground, it's in the flower pot. But since it's touching the ground, that she says, the havi kemehubar, it's considered attached. Why? The yonek menakarka. Because that plant in the flower pot is deriving nutrients and nourishment from the ground. How? Al yedeh nekev. Through the hole, shemeriach lachluchita karka, it smells the moisture of the ground. Vafidu anekev bedofno, amazing that she says even if the hole is on the side of the flower pot, now you're giving, it's not even touching. Now that it's able to smell the ground that's there, and therefore the Tanakama gives it a status of mehubad, attached. And if you pull something from an attached that's attached to the ground on Shabbat, you hayav mishum tolesh. However, if it's atzitz she'enu nakuv, so you're not going to be hayav, which means pulling out of a flower pot is not considered pulling out of the ground, even though it is receiving nutrients from the dirt, but that's not considered from the ground. That's not tilishat. It says davka when it's in the karka, not when it's in a pot. However, the Gemara, the Mishnah concludes that Bishimon poter bazeh ubazeh. The Mishnah says both are mutar, even if the flower pot is touching the ground, patur. Even if it's touching, patur avalasur, which is even if it's touching the ground, it's not going to be considered chayuf hata, which is he doesn't consider an atzitz nakuv mehubar lakarka. Comes the Gemara and says, Rameh le Abaye le Rava. Abaye brought a contradiction to Rava. Ve'amri la Rabbi Chiya bar Rav le Rav. And some say it was a contradiction brought from Rav Chiya bar Rav to Rav. Tanan we learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon poter bazeh ubazeh. Right? Rabbi Shimon's language, when he talked about the different flower pots, what was his lashon? Poter bazeh ubazeh. Alma nakuv le Rabbi Shimon kesheeno nakuv mashvile. From that language, bazeh ubazeh sounds like that the flower pots, whether they have a hole in them or not, are equal. Which means they have the same status. Now when it says bazeh ubazeh, it sounds like that in all its laws, because there's no difference between a hatzitz nakuv to a hatzitz eno nakuv. The only problem is we found Rabbi Shimon somewhere else make a difference. So the Gemara says, "V'reminu Rabbi Shimon omer en ben nakuv le she'enu nakuv."
There is no difference between whether it has a hole in it or not, except Ela Lehakshir Zira'im Bilvad. Only regarding to the law of Hekshir Zira'im. Now let's discuss Hekshir Zira'im. We know that in order for a fruit to become Mekabel Tum'ah, you need two things. First of all, it needs to be detached from the ground to be Mekabel Tum'ah, which means if, let's say, an apple is attached to the tree, and something tameh touched the apple when it's attached to the tree, it's not susceptible to tumah. It has to be detached. Furthermore, it's only mekabel tumah if it was prepared to receive tumah. How does the fruit become prepared? So it's called hakshara. One of the seven liquids has to fall on the fruit willingly, and then it becomes wetted from the seven liquids. Now it can receive tumah. What are the seven liquids? So we have a mnemonic to remember them. Yad, shahat, dam. Yad, shahat, dam. Yud is yayin. Dalit is, we could say, dvash. That's yad. Shahat is shemen. This means shemen zayit, olive oil. Hayat would be halav, milk. Shahat, tet would be tal. Okay, do. Yad, shahat, dam. The dalit is dam, is actually blood, and the mem is mayim. So any of the seven liquids that fall on a fruit can makshir it to mekabel tumah. So only when the fruit is detached. Mm-hmm. So the Bishamon has chidush here. The Bishamon says that there is no difference between atzitz nakuv la atzitz she'enu nakuv, except the law of hakshara, meaning. It's obvious if, let's say, you have an atzitz that's enonakuv. There's no hole on the bottom. So that's considered detached from the ground. So any fruit that's in that flower pot is considered detached. Obviously, it can receive hakshara, which means if water falls on it, that would be considered makshid, and therefore it can receive tumah. The chidush of the Bishamon is, however, if it's an atzitz nakuv, it's considered attached to the ground regarding the law of hakshara, which means it's not considered mukshar. The water that fell on it in its attached state is not considered mukshar. The water has to fall on it, so to speak, after it is detached. So he'll hold that what? That there is a difference between atzitz nakuv and atzitz she'enu nakuv, which means the law of hakshara zira'im, preparing the fruit for tumah. We'll say if it's an atzitz nakuv, it's considered attached to the ground, that the hakshara is not hakshara. So that's a contradiction to what he said in the Mishnah. What's the contradiction? Because in the Mishnah, when he said Rabbi Shimon poter bazeh u'bazeh, the bazeh u'bazeh sounds like they're equal, that there is no difference in halakha between them. Now we're seeing that indeed there is one difference. There's a difference between atzitz nakuv and atzitz she'enu nakuv. So the Gemara says, Amar leh, he said back, Lechol mili Rabbi Shimon ketalush mashvili. Listen, when it comes to all halachot, Rabbi Shimon is really consistent. He says atzitz nakuv is considered detached. What does it mean, lechol mili? Meaning, le'inyan Shabbat, if you pull something out of an atzitz nakuv, you're not hayav. Le'inyan, let's say, meka omenka, business. Well, what's the name business? That she tells us that liknot b'mshicha ve'lo b'kesef, which means the way you purchase things that are not attached to the ground is you make mshicha. You have to actually lift the item up, right? You have to put the item in your domain. Karka, land, you can't acquire b'mshicha. You can't lift ground, right? Karka you acquire with kesef. So therefore, once we consider an atzitz nakuv as detached, so the way you're going to make an acquisition on it is through mishicha and not through money alone. You have to actually make a mishicha because it's considered a not attached. Furthermore, there'll be a difference, another difference that she says, practical halakha that comes out of this. Binyan the din of a prosbol. What's the din of a prosbol? In the seventh year of Shemitah, all a person's outstanding loans are wiped away. Which means whatever, let's say, he owes somebody else, or others owe him, all those loans are cleaned out in the Shemitah. It's called Shemitat Kesafim.
But the rabbis instituted a prosbol, where you're able to write a document that all the money that people owe you, you're transferring those debts that people owe you to Beit Din. So the Torah says an individual can't collect his debts on Shemitah, but Beit Din can collect it. But the law is that you can only write a prosbol to somebody who owns land. You have to be a landowner. So therefore, we have to, if a guy owns an atzitz, nakuv, that's not considered a landowner because it's not considered attached to the ground. So it'll be another halakha regarding prosbol. So bottom line, Rabbi Shimon holds, for all laws, atzitz, nakuv is considered detached. The inyan Shabbat, the inyan, the kinyan that you're going to make is meshicha, the inyan of prosbol, except for one exception. For Hakshadat Zera'im, we're going to consider it attached. Why? He says, because there we have a special Gezerat HaKatuv, a special Pasuk that comes to include even an Atzitz Nakuv. How? V'shari le'anyan Tum'ah. It's different regarding the law of Tum'ah. That Torah Ripta Ta'ara Etzel Zera'im. Which means the Torah, when it talks about Zera'im, different fruits, let's say, right? Becoming Tameh, it says, Shene Emad, the Pasuk writes, and I'll quote you the Pasuk, it says, V'yichi yipol miniblatam. Let's say a nevela, something that's Tameh, says, Al kol zera zerua asher yizareya. The Pasuk says, on any zera, on any fruit that's planted, that you planted, or that is planted, it says the word zera, Zeruah, Asher Yizareya. It says it many times. Now, if the Nevelah falls on it when it's attached, so then of course it's going to be Tahor. But from the fact that it says the word so many times in the Pasuk, they come along and say that for a plant or for a fruit to receive Hakshara, if it's attached in any way, it's going to be tahor. Which means not only if it's attached regular to the ground, for sure it doesn't receive akshara, but from the fact that it says any type of zera, zeruwa, sheri, zareya, any form of attachment to the ground is going to take it away from susceptibility to akshara tum'ah. And what is any form? Even an atzitz. That's nakuv. Even though according to the strict law, really, it's detached. But it has some connection to the ground. Since we have so many words, Zera, Zeruah, Acheri, Zareya, all those words come as any fruit that has any attachment to the ground, in any which way, even if it's minimal, even if it's an Hatzitz, Nakuf, Le'inyan Akshara, Tahoru, it is going to be Tahor. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon says, what do you want? I have a Pasuk over here that for some reason by Hakshara is coming to include even such a flapper. But for everything else, there is no difference. Whether it's nakuv or not, it's detached. But for one item, we're going to consider that attachment to the ground significant because of the extra words in the Pasuk that's coming to include many types of fruits for non-susceptibility to Tum'ah. Zera, Zeru, Asheri, Zareya, even the atzitz that is nakuv is going to be considered attached for this halakha. Comes the Gemara and says, Ba'a mineahu saba mirabi zera. Now the Gemara continues. There was a certain older man, ahu saba, an older man, Zaken, he asked a question to Rabbi Zera. Shoresh keneged nekev, mali amar Rabbi Shimon. According to Rabbi Shimon, that says, atzitz nakuf, the flower pot that has a hole in it, right? It's considered detached. What about if, let's say, the root is coming out of the flower pot, and it's directly facing the ground. Which means the root, let's say, is coming out of the bottom of the pot, let's say, and it's right there on the ground. Is it a bee? On the ground.
Attached?
No, it's on the ground. Okay. Not in the ground, touching the ground or above the ground. Okay. Is Rabbi Shimon going to be lenient even in such a case? which is, till now we're talking about stav, you have a flower pot on the ground and there's a hole in it. But now already he's adding to it. He said, what about if there's a root, let's say, coming out of the flower pot that's towards the ground? Is he going to be lenient to say it's detached even in that case? So when the Rabbi Zera was posed the question, it says ishtik. He was silent. Velo amarle velamide. He didn't say anything. He kept quiet. Seems he didn't know the answer. Zimna hada. One time, ashkehe, this old man, he saw the yativ v'ka'amar. He saw Rabbi Zera saying the following halakha. Umode Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon agrees. She'im nikav b'chde tahorato. That if, let's say, you have a vessel, okay, you have a keli, a flower pot, let's say. Now we know that for a vessel to lose its susceptibility to tumah, because all vessels are susceptible to tumah because it's a keli, how does a, let's say, keli heres lose its susceptibility? So of course it breaks. Then of course it, if it was tameh, now becomes tahor, and now obviously it does not have any more susceptibility to tumah. But even if it doesn't fully break, even if, let's say, it gets a hole in it, the size of, let's say, an olive, the Gemara says, so already that's considered broken, and therefore it's not considered tameh. So there was one time Rabbi Zera was sitting and saying halakha. He said, Rabotai, when you have this atzit nakuv, right? You have the hole on the bottom of it, right? And what happened? You have now a hole that's coming out of the side of it, which is what? The size of an olive. So once it loses its status of a keli, so therefore it's not considered an atzitz anymore. Now the whole thing is considered batel to the ground, and therefore it's going to be considered attached. That was the statement of the Bizera. Now what does he mean if it's considered attached? If it's considered attached to the ground, I don't care now where the roots are coming from, which means even if the roots are not coming towards the ground anymore, the whole vessel is considered attached. Why? Because it lost its status of a keli. So the Gemara says, when the old man heard him say that, he said, hold it. Hashta, shoresh keneged nekev ba'ay minach. I asked you a question on a regular flower pot. If the shoresh, if the root is facing the ground, velo amarti velo mideh. And you didn't answer me. You didn't give me an answer. Nikav bichdeh ta'orato mebaya. So this statement you just said, where you have a hole in it, that should at least be a question to you as well. Which is, what was the old man bothered with this halakha and the question that he asked? So I'll explain it to you. He understood like this. We have to give an introduction here. If let's say you have a keli that let's say has a hole in it the size of a zayat. True, granted, this keli now is not susceptible to tumah anymore as a keli, because the hole is the size of a zayat, the size of an olive. It takes its status of a keli away. However, there is one factor here. A person will use that vessel not as a keli, but he'll use it as a gistera. What is a gistera? Gistera is like a small chard of heres that people would use, let's say, to put under a leak in the house in order to catch the to catch the water. So you'll use it as a gistera. Now, you'll only use it as a gistera if it can hold at least 8 vi'it of water. Okay, so now let's analyze it. Let's say you have this, you have a pot over here, right? Let's say the bottom is sealed, okay? But it can still be considered an atzitz nakuv, because remember we learned that in the Mishnah, it doesn't matter where the hole is, it can be on the side even, right? Now let's say you have a keli, and the hole is the size of a olive, right? So what'd the rabbi say? The rabbi said, oh, that item over there is considered mehubar now. Because it's not considered a keli, it's mechubar. However, the old man said, hold it. True, you want to tell me it's not considered a keli. However, it is a keli regarding that it can be used as a gistra. Meaning, let's say the hole was high up. Okay? So the keli can still hold a revi'it. So since you would use it as a gistera, it still is considered some form of a keli. And what is, that's what you understood what the rabbis were saying. So therefore he said like this, hold it. You tell me if you have a hole, even if it can still hold it if you eat, you're still considering it now attached to the ground. It's not considered a keli, you're telling me. And therefore he said, hold it. I asked you a question. And I told you, if it's still a keli, and the root is by the ground, and you didn't know. Now you tell me if it's still considered a quasi keli, meaning it can still be used as a gistera. You told me it's attached. I don't care where the root is coming from. Which means, why my question you didn't know, and this one you're saying it, Pastor, you should have a question on this also. Which means, basically you're telling me, if you have a keli, has a hole in it, true it, let's say it's not considered a keli because it has all the size of a zayin. But if it can still hold it if you eat, so it can still be used as a gistera to catch the drippage, and therefore still considered a keli to a certain extent, and then, but still you said what? I don't care. It's considered attached. I don't care where the root's coming out of either, by the way. Even if the root is not by the ground, obviously the root's coming out of the side at best. And still you tell me attached. So why when I asked you the question, if you have a keli, hatzitz, not cool, and the root is by the ground, you told me, I don't know, yishtit. If this is simple to you, so the other case should also be simple to you, which is you have a keli, no matter where the root is. Call them also if the root is by the ground. So the Gemara says, no. The old man misunderstood what Rabbi Zira said in that deen. The Gemara says, Amar Abaye, V'i itmar le'ad Rabbi Zira hachiud itmar. Yeah, this is what Rabbi Zira meant in that statement. U'modeh Rabbi Shimon, she'im nikav le'mata merivi'it. He was saying, when I said that there's a hole in the keli that makes it not a keli anymore, it's talking about where the hole was low. And therefore wouldn't be able to hold even a Levi'it. And therefore it's not considered not a keli, nor can it be used for a gistera, which is wholly considered useless. Therefore it's considered batel to the ground. You asked me a question where it's still a keli. Huh, so that's a different story. Which means the old man misunderstood Rabbi Zira's story. He thought when he said a hole in it, it doesn't matter even if it can still hold it if you eat. So he said if it can still hold it if you eat, so it's a keli for a gistera. So therefore, and you're still telling me it's considered attached. I don't care where the root's coming out of. So therefore, if that was simple to you, why was my question a question to you? Where it's a keli and the root is actually by the ground. So the Gemara says, yeah, because the old man misunderstood the Bizera. The Bizera just said that if there's a hole in the keli, and the hole is low enough, where now the keli cannot even be used as a gistera, because it cannot hold a Nevi'i, then it's considered attached. Oh, because it's useless. Now the old man's question makes sense again. The old man would say, oh, listen, let's say it's still a vessel. It's just that the root is by the ground. Maybe the Vishwam will say that the root is by the ground. That's considered that. And to that he's okay, I don't know the answer to that question. I only know if it's not a keli at all, not for itself and not for a gistera, then already for sure it's considered attached, even according to the B, Shimon. But your question where it still maintains the status of a keli, that's already another question. Comes the Gemara now and says, Amar Rava taught, Hamesh midot bekeli. There are five different measurements regarding a keli heres. Okay, we have five different laws regarding a keli heres that got punctured. Okay, Gemara says rule number one: nikav kemotzi mashke. Let's say it got a very small hole in the keli heres, enough for liquid to drip out of it. That's motzi mashke. Tahor militame gistera. It'll be tahor even as a gistera, meaning like this. A regular keli heres that has a little hole in it, the owner of the keli is not going to dump the keli just for that little hole. He'll still use it. And therefore, it still has susceptibility to tumah, or if it was tameh, it'll still remain tameh. But let's say this keli over here got a hole in it. Let's say it's still able to, got a big hole in it, let's say.
but you're still able to use it as a gistera. Okay? Because we said a gistera, you'll use it, right? It's a chard now. Right? You take the gistera, you put it under the leek and dripping, fine. Now let's say the gistera got a little hole in it. Then already for a gistera, a little hole, you dump it. Because a person, he'll put, let's say, a coaster under his cup in order to catch the little leakage of it, of the hole, but a person's not going to put a gistera under a gistera. When he's already, there's a broken piece already. So he found the usage for it. He's going to catch his, the water that's leaking. But now if there's a hole in that, he's not putting another gistera underneath it to catch the hole that's leaking from that. So therefore, a pinhole, we'll call it, let's say, while it doesn't take the status of a keli out of a keli, but it'll take the gistera out of a gistera. Because the gistera's already broken already, right? You found the usage for a broken keli, but now if that gistera got a hole in it, so now everybody, what, guy's going to now say, oh, let me put another, it's like putting say it like this is the way we said it. A person will put a coaster under his cup, but he's not putting a coaster under his coaster. So that's the same thing with the gistera. He's not going to put another gistera on it. So therefore, the first deen is like this. Let's read the deen again. Nikav kemotzi mashkeh. If let's say you have a hole in the cheres, the size where mashkeh can come out, tahor min tame gistera. It'll only be tahor regarding the gistera, not the actual keli itself. Ve'adayin keliu lekadesh bo mehatat. But it's still considered a keli, let's say the regular keli. Let's say if a person wanted, a kohen wants to put in it mehatat, that's the waters of the paraduma. The law says you have to put it in a keli. So it's like this little hole is not going to take it out of a status of a keli, and therefore you can't put, let's say, mehatat in the vessel. Which is to put mehatat, the waters of the paraduma, in the vessel, it has to be a vessel that's able to be susceptible to tuma. So he's saying, regarding the vessel itself with that little hole in it, it's a keli. You can even put mehatat in it. However, if a gistera got such a hole in it, already is tahor. That's the first deen. Second deen, kekones mashkeh. Let's say the hole is big enough, not only for water to come out of it, but for water to go in. For example, let's say you would take that vessel and submerge it into water. If the hole is big enough that water will go in from the outside of the keli, which is a bigger hole, right? Because if it's a smaller hole, even when you submerge it, the water can only go one way, it doesn't go in. But if it's bigger, it can even go from the outside. So what's the deen with that? Kekones mashkeh tahor melekadesh po mehatat. It's not considered a vessel anymore to be used for mehatat, which means to put the, let's say, the waters of mehatat in there. Ve'adayin keliu lakshir bo zira'im. But it's still going to be a keli regarding hakshadat zira'im. Meaning, let's read Rashi. Rashi dibura matril. 1, 2, 3 lines after they get wide. Ba'adayin keli, actually, below that. Nikav kekones mashkeh. See that? Nikav kekones mashkeh she'im moshivo alamayim. If you place this keli in water, nichnas betocho, the water will go in from the outside. Da'ainu. Nekev rahat ksat, it's a little wider. Next Rashi. Tahor melekadesh bo mehatat, meaning tahor lav davka, ela kamo tahir yoma. Kelomar, batel lo metorat keli lenyan mehatat. Which means it loses its status of a keli lenyan mehatat, which means you cannot use this keli to put mehatat in anymore. Ve'adayin keliu lenyan ekshe zira'im. But it's still considered a keli with this hole in it for haksharat zimrashi hazira'im betucho. That's how you have fruit that's planted in this keli. Dichtilu shim ninu. We're going to consider these items talush. Is this hole is going to be considered big enough to make what's planted inside detached? Vafilu l'rabbanan, and even according to the rabbis that say that a flower pot with a hole in it is considered attached, she'en nekev zera'ui la'aliyach la'chidach karka, which is this hole is too small, and therefore it's not considered big enough to draw nutrients from the ground. And therefore even the rabbis that normally hold a hole is considered attached in the flower pot, this hole is too small. And therefore it's going to be considered detached. And therefore if water falls on it, it'll be considered, yes, hechsher. Right? Because since it's detached, the water falls on a detached fruit, it's considered hekser. So let's review the second measurement. The second measurement is if you have a hole big enough that the water can go in from the outside, well, it lost its status as a keli for mechatat. That's too big of a hole, and therefore you cannot use it for mechatat anymore. However, it's considered not big enough to consider the atzitz nakuv attached to the ground. Because to be considered attaching a bigger hole to, I guess, to receive the nutrient. And therefore, if it's considered detached, and now water falls on this fruit, what's the deen? Hechsher, na'inyan tum'ah. So that's the second deen. Third deen, nikav keshoresh katan. Oh, now let's say the hole is big enough for a small root to come out of it. Tahor milakshir bo zira'im. Well, number one, now it's going to be considered attached. That hole is big enough to consider attached for zira'im, meaning, now if water falls on this item, we consider it, it's attached enough, right? Even according to the Bishamon, right? Then we learn the Bishamon holds that the only time an atzitz nakuv is considered attached is for what? For zira'im and akshara. This hole, that's the size of a root, will be considered attached, even according to the Bishamon, for what? For the law of Hakshara. That therefore, if water falls on it, it's not going to makshir it. V'adayin keliu lekabel bozetim. However, it's still a keliu. Meaning, so long as the hole is not the size of an olive, it's still considered a vessel that will be used, and therefore susceptible to tumah. However, nikav kemotzi zetim. But once the hole is the size of an olive, tahor milikabel bo zetim. Finished. Now it's tahor, which is it loses its status for receiving olives, and that's the normal, let's say, size items that a person would put in the keli. And therefore, that's like the seemingly the last measurement. Once the hole is the size of an olive, tahor. The Gemara says, wait, v'adayin keli ulikabel bo rimonim. But it's still a keli if you want to put rimonim in it, which means, if the guy, let's say, makes a conscious decision and says, alright, there's a hole of an olive in it, but you know what? I'm not going to put olives in it. I'm going to put now pomegranates in it. So if he makes that decision to use it for pomegranates, it'll still receive tumah, because the hole is not large enough, right? It can still hold the monim. Nikav kemotzi monim. But once it has the hole the size of a rimon, tahor miklum. Then it's tahor from everything, which means it loses its status for everything, because nobody, once the hole is that big, you're not using it for anything else. So the Gemara says one more deen. V'imukav samid patil. However, if the keli has a samid patil, which means a cover on it, a seal on it, ad shiftat rubo. Ad shiftat rubo is only until the majority of the keli is broken. What does that mean? The law says like this. If you have a keli that has stuff in it, the keli is in a house where there's a mit. What happens to a keli hayres? All the things that are in the keli hayres are going to be susceptible to the tumah, unless it has samid patil. What is samid patil? A seal on it. If there's a seal on the top of the keli hayres, the tumah cannot go in. Now let's say you have a samid patil on top, but you have a hole on the side. The law is that tumah cannot go into the side of a keli hayres. The tumah only goes in from the top. But since the top is sealed, not susceptible, unless the majority of the side of the keli is opened, even though there's a samid patil, it's able to enter the side. So therefore it's possible, even if let's say you have a hole the size of a rimon, it will affect the samid patil law, which means if a person has a samid patil, a seal over the keli, right? And let's say it has a hole on the side of it, and the hole is gaping, which is the majority of the keli, then it still will be considered tameh, what's inside. However, if it's not the majority of the keli, it will not. So comes the Nashi, let's just finish with that one word in Nashi. Nashi says, v'imaya mukav samid patil, fall onto the bottom, v'u be'oil amit, and it's an oil amit, en tum'ah nechneset bo derech nekev. Right, the hole, the tum'ah does not go through the hole that's on the side, even if it's the size of an imon. It cannot go to the side. Umatzila komashe beducha ad shiyifhat rubo, until the majority of the keli becomes open. Dechol kli patuach ketiv derech petach nechneset otuma. It only goes through the opening. Ve'lo derech nekabav. Okay, Baruch Anu Ale Olam. Amen. Amen.